The opinions expressed on Breaking News Bears are individual and are not necessarily representative of Spirit Live or Toronto Metropolitan University. Thank you for listening.
Welcome to the Breaking News Bears podcast. I'm your host, Chris Capone, joined alongside my co-host once again, Evan Davis. And there is a lot to discuss regarding MLB free agency, including an article that recently came out from Bleacher Report discussing the contracts and landing spot predictions for free agency's top 25 players. We'll go over that and discuss our opinion on that, along with who we believe the first domino to fall will be to set free agency ablaze and have everyone start signing to teams all across MLB, along with our thoughts on who we believe a surprise team could be in the offseason and make some moves that really propel their trajectory ahead of schedule. Evan, I'll send it off to you. Who was one name in the article that you really found interesting?
I think one name in the article that I really found interesting in terms of even the team that looking like now thinking about it makes sense is Jock Peterson of the Kansas City Royals, because we were talking about like doing the recap of that Yankees Royals series. It's like, you know, the Royals have Bobby Witt Jr., they have Vinny Pasquantino. Salvador Perez obviously was phenomenal, but he's not getting any younger. Not to say that Jock Peterson is some young buck as well, but you need another power bat in that lineup. And they had Jock Peterson on a 2-year, $28 million deal. And I think that is a phenomenal contract. You look at his 2024 season, 23 homers, 64 RBIs, and 908 OPS. He played sparingly. Now, the one thing that might hold the Royals back is the fact that Jock Peterson is a DH. You know, sometimes you want Salvador Perez as your DH. Obviously, Salvi isn't going to be playing every day, regardless of if he's a DH or a catcher, but you want that DH spot at least to be fluid. And with Peterson, it's not going to be fluid. So you run the risk of that. But nonetheless, you get a power bat in your lineup that had a 515 slug. And I think this is a guy that will absolutely bolster at that four hole for the Royals.
Yeah, no, that was, like you said, it was something that we were talking about, that the Royals really need some more depth in their lineup, where they have, you know, basically once you get past that top four, it's like, who else is really going to hit for this team? So yeah, I think Jock Peterson would be a really interesting addition for them to kind of fill that DH role most of the time. One of the players that I thought was a really interesting move was Nathan Eovaldi to the Nationals. Now, we talked about it, I think maybe two episodes ago, where the Nationals have a really big shot to, you know, really propel their trajectory ahead of schedule this upcoming year. And we talk about it where one of their weaknesses is kind of that rotation spot, where obviously Patrick Corbin's going to be off the team after this year, after that big extension they'd given him after 2019. Cool. And now you have a spot open in your rotation where Nathan Eovaldi has been such a steady piece for many teams throughout the last decade, and now he'd be such a perfect addition. And what Bleacher Report has him as is a 2 years, $39 million deal. And I believe that's kind of a steal for Nathan Eovaldi. I feel like that's going to be the rate at which he goes for. This past year had a 3.80 ERA. Last year in the postseason was huge for the Texas Rangers and really was their ace in that postseason and really meant a lot for them. Obviously, with the amount of injuries they had, with Scherzer not being able to pitch full time in the postseason, and DeGrom being out for the whole postseason and second half of the season last year. But yeah, getting Nathan Eovaldi would be kind of putting the Nationals ahead of schedule, I believe, just where, you know, it would be such a good fit for them, as I said, with that rotation spot opening up. And they have a young rotation around him with DJ Hers. You know, you have Jake Irvin, who was okay this year. He's 27. Mackenzie Gore, obviously that current ace for the Nationals right now. Mitchell Parker as well. I think adding Nathan Eovaldi would be a really solid piece to that Nationals rotation.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, one of the main things that we had said those last couple episodes ago was the fact that, like, Mackenzie Gore is a phenomenal pitcher. I think the future is bright for him. You look at DJ Hers as well, two guys that really stepped up. You know, you had Mitchell Parker have his moments, but then again, like, all these guys are like 23, 24 years old. You're not expecting them to be these superb pitchers this early.
They're all lefties.
Yeah. And the problem is, like, yeah, they're also all lefties. You need right-handed pitching. Nathan Eovaldi, I think, would also just be a nice veteran presence to have. Like, he's a champion, he's a winner. I think he would be great. Obviously, the Nationals have righties that are coming up within their system. So I think they're kind of like, we don't want to spend all this money when we're still trying. Like, they're still a development team. I look at another pitcher on this Bleacher Report list, and it's the, Dodgers ace, if you will, Jack Flaherty, and they have him on a 3-year, $60 million deal going to the Atlanta Braves. And I wonder, like, how does that, and it has an opt out after that first year. And look, I love Jack Flaherty, but you could tell that arm was just, it was falling off towards the end of the year. And that's fair. You're pitching a lot of innings. You're deep into the season, World Series, obviously, but you could tell even like in his starts, in his end starts of the postseason, in the regular season, the velo was kind of ticking down. His ERA across 5 playoff starts wasn't the best, per se. And I just, he's got a really nice pitch arsenal. The problem is like when he's off, like there's just no rebounding. It's just like you saw it in the Mets game and game 5 of the NLDS, where it's like after that first inning, you kind of were just like you knew where it was going. Whereas like with a guy like Yamamoto, for instance, after that first inning against the Padres in game 5 of the NLDS, he slowly but surely got back into it. Even after he gave up the home run to Juan Soto, he retired the next 13 batters in, or 11 batters in a row. The problem with Flaherty is like, and when he's on, he's on. When he's not, he's not. And although he is only 29 years old, you saw how he ended last year with the Baltimore Orioles. It's why he only got a 1-year deal. The Dodgers were lucky enough to win game 5 after he only got the team 4 outs. I don't know if he gets another 1-year deal. I really don't know what his market looks like, because it's so hard to determine. Is he a $25 million pitcher, or is he the $14 million pitcher that the Tigers signed last offseason?
Yeah, and another thing really interesting about the article is they have Max Fried going to the Orioles now,
And he's going to the Dodgers.
a 6-year, $168 million deal. And as you said, we've discussed him going to the Dodgers, and it just seems like
He is, he is, he
it's
is.
such a clear it's such a clear path for him to go to the Dodgers, especially if Flaherty were to leave. It just makes all too much sense. But one other pitcher that I thought was really interesting is Blake Snell going to the Boston Red Sox with a 5-year, $158 million
Oh.
deal. I don't really see Blake Snell getting, that long of a contract for that much money. I'm sure that's what Scott Boras wants. I'm sure Scott Boras wants his client getting 30 million
Yeah.
a year, but I don't see a world where, Blake Snell is a second half merchant, and we discuss it where
He's the greatest second half pitcher of all time, or at least of this era, like of this generation of baseball.
And we discussed it where I don't know if teams are really willing to give a pitcher that much money, where especially for that long of a tenure, where he's going to be pitching half of your the first half of your games, he's probably going to have around near five, near six ERA, and then oh, but in the second half, he's going to have it down to like a 1.5 to 2 range, and it's like oh, it evens out at 3. But it's like Blake Snell has been so wishy-washy over the last couple of years. He won the Cy Young the year before this, where he led the majors in walks. Like
Yeah.
he's so volatile that you never know what you're going to get from him.
And also, he's turning 32 on December 4th. Like, so you're telling me, and I really, maybe I'm missing something, but what is the media's obsession with thinking like the Boston Red Sox are going to be this heavy spending team? Because for whatever reason, like the last 2 off seasons now, everyone's saying that the Red Sox are going to be this aggressive team. And it's like you signed Tyler O'Neill to like a 1 year, you traded for Tyler O'Neill. Like, okay, great. Like he strikes out 30% of the time. He's like a Costco Teoscar Hernandez. You struck out on Teoscar Hernandez, so that's why you went for Tyler O'Neill. And then you didn't get Blake Snell last offseason. You didn't get Teoscar last offseason. Now they're talking about the Red Sox want to get Teoscar, which means you have to give up a draft pick based on like the because the Dodgers now gave Teoscar the qualifying offer. And I don't get the media's obsession. Like the Red Sox aren't a pitcher away or a hitter away from being better than the Yankees or the Orioles. I know the Yankees have so many free agents, but you can't tell me that they aren't going to spend. And even I just think there's so many teams I would put ahead of the Red Sox, especially in the National League. Like, I'm just saying, I don't think they're a player or a pitcher away from being a World Series champion, knocking off the Dodgers, Padres, the Phillies. Like, I would count four or five teams in the National League before I even think of the American League in terms of World Series contenders. And to give Blake Snell that length of a contract would be like when the Rangers gave Jacob deGrom the 5 years. It's stupid. Like, you know it's not going to work out. And again, in a lineup that is still so young with guys like Willier, Abreu, and I'm forgetting some of the other guys as well, Zinedine Rafaela, you have Jarren Duran, but like one power bat isn't going to take this team over the hump, even in the AL East. So I don't agree with that. There's been talks about now that, Snell, Fried, Burns, like their pitching staff is so mid anyways. Like, one pitcher isn't going to change that for this team.
Yeah, when your best starting pitcher is Tanner Houck and he's not really a strikeout guy, and then you have other players like Cutter Crawford who throws meatballs like every other pitch, it seems.
Dude, that Ohtani home run against Cutter Crawford
Yeah,
that went into the playground, like,
it's insane. Like, I don't know. I don't see a world where like the Red Sox can make all the moves, but I don't really see a move where they really get out of this kind of funk that they're in. Where it's like, I don't get it where they're always the one that's projected to spend so much money when they haven't done that.
I don't get, like, look, obviously Brian Baio, they gave him that really nice contract. He was horrible this last year, above 4 ERA, a whip at 1.35. But Yoshida was not great. Trevor Story is constantly injured. Rafael Devers is the only bright spot. David Hamilton's a speedster, but you're really not trusting him to lay a big bat. He had a 697 OPS. I don't see how, they're talking about Garrett Crochet possibly being a fit. Like, even if you inserted Corbin Burns or Max Fried into this rotation, obviously everyone takes a step down. I still don't like Tanner Houck, Brian Baio, or Lucas Giolito as my two starter in a postseason. Like, objectively speaking, you go 1-2-3, Corbin Burns probably overtakes your game one, the opponent's game one starter, depending on the team. Game two and three, like, what are you doing? Like, there's no way you're telling me. I don't know. You could even look at the Yankees, although their offense wasn't that great. Gerrit Cole versus Corbin Burns, that's a toss-up. Then you look at game two, Carlos Rodon or Brian Baio. And I know Rodon got lit up by the Dodgers, but they were just great against left-handed pitching throughout the entire year. But you're still going to take Rodon, and you're still going to take a guy like Luis Gil, who will now be a polished starter, or even a guy like Clark Schmidt. So I just don't understand the obsession with the Red Sox. Like, I get new ownership, but again, like, you're not a team like the Padres or the Diamondbacks, for instance, or even a team like the Baltimore Orioles that's like one piece away from getting over the hump, or even the Royals for that matter.
Yeah, I don't get the obsession with the Red Sox. I know they're supposed to be one of the storied teams, one of the storied franchises, and everyone wants them to spend money to, get back to glory, but I just don't see it. One last player that I thought was really interesting is they have Alex Bregman remaining with the Astros, and I just don't think that's happening at all. And they say him having a 5-year deal with a 26 million club option for 2030. I don't see Alex Bregman re-signing with the Astros at all. I think we especially seen it after they lost to the Tigers, where he tweeted, "Thanks for everything, Astros fans." Like, I think he already has a foot out the door, and he's already just determining what length of a contract he wants with any other suitors, because there's going to be a lot of suitors for him.
Yeah, and I think when you look at it, like, I really don't know, what the game plan is for this Houston Astros team. So obviously you have Yordan Alvarez under contract, for these next 4 years. They bought out his arbitration years, just hit him with a 6-year, $115 million contract. You have Kyle Tucker, you have all these guys, but it's just like Alex Bregman, ideally, he should stay with the Houston Astros just because that left field batter, like that left field Crawford box, I think is what it's called, has really benefited him during his time in Houston. But Like Kyle Tucker's a UFA after this year. He still has that 1 year left of arbitration, and you're going to have to pay him. He's going to be 29 years old. And if you don't think Kyle Tucker is getting a $200 million contract, or at least somewhere in that ballpark, like the Houston Astros are going to do everything in their power to make sure that they have Kyle Tucker in an Astros uniform for the rest of his career, and he absolutely deserves that right. I think with the Astros, they got to spend more on pitching because you say Kikuchi's a free agent. Justin Verlander, I don't think they should bring him back. Like, if you want to bring him back as a coach, by all means, I don't think you should take a foot on the mound again. They have so many injuries when you talk about Jose Urquidy. Obviously, Hunter Brown is a bright spot, but they've dealt with so many injuries this season that with so many pitchers on the market, I think they got to detour and spend the money there because they're starting pitching outside of Valdez and Brown. And they had Spencer Arrighetti as well, who had his moments, but at the same time was a high walk pitcher. You gotta power in some more notable arms because Arrighetti and Kikuchi weren't even used in the postseason.
Yeah. And seeing as how the article also says they predict Kikuchi going somewhere else, and I think he's going to leave somewhere too. I just think it's really interesting to see what the Astros do moving forward. And Scott Boras recently put out that Alex Bregman is willing to move to second base, and I don't see it at all. And
It's not like the market's any better for value-wise for second baseman.
Yeah, and they had talked about it earlier this year too, when Alex Bregman missed some time and was on the IL. They had him originally, they were going to plan to move him to first base for a bit in case his arm couldn't get back to proper throwing strength in time, but he never actually ended up playing first base at all this year. But I just think it's so weird how they've been trying to, put him in different spots, and Boras says he can move to second base and he can do this and he can do that. I just don't really see it. I think if a team signs Alex Bregman, they're signing him to be their third baseman. And I don't see any reason why Boras wants to move him from that position, because third baseman is a really highly coveted position, and second baseman isn't that coveted at all. So
Yeah,
I don't
you'd be
know.
killing market value.
Yeah, I don't know what's with Boras trying to say, oh, he can play second too. It's like, okay, I want him as a third baseman.
Look, I don't know. Based on the vibes of Minute Maid Park, it seems like Alex Bregman is gone. And I think he would go. I think he fits perfectly with the Yankees now that Gleyber Torres is most likely leaving. Alex Verdugo is probably going to leave. You can move Jazz back to the outfield. You could, and he doesn't have to play third base anymore. I think him going to the Yankees, even if they sign Soto, like it's the Yankees. They have so much money that I just think he would fit perfectly with that team, and you could get everyone back to their normal position, and Gleyber Torres could say, I'm going to go play second base somewhere else.
Yeah. And moving on, we could discuss who do we believe the first domino to fall in free agency would be. And I guess you'll start with it, because I originally thought Juan Soto was going to be that domino. But we talked about before we did this episode, and you said you had someone else in mind.
Yeah, I love free agency honestly more than the regular season just because it's so much fun to figure, where everyone's going. I think Pete Alonso's the first domino to fall, and I thought he was going back to the Mariners, but now or I thought I'm sorry, not back to the Mariners. I thought he was going to the Mariners. Now I think he's going back to the Mets. Like I just don't see, obviously, he had a really underwhelming year last year, but this is still a guy that can hit 40 home runs, entering into what would be like his age 31, 32 season can deter teams from wanting to sign him to a long-term big ticket. But going on Twitter and listening to what all these MLB insiders have to say, it's the growing impression that I've been getting is that no team really values Pete Alonso more than the Mets do. And I think that's also just more from a culture and locker room perspective. And so I do think Pete Alonso is the first domino to fall, just because I think the longer the Mets wait and the longer Pete Alonso waits, we could be heading towards that Jordan Montgomery, Blake Snell situation where Alonso maybe thought he was going to get, call it like a 4-year, $110 million deal that then turns into a 2-year, $40 million or $50 million deal with a player option, the Boris type of deal. So I think Pete Alonso's the first to fall just because he's never been in this position in free agency. And I don't think he wants to leave the city of New York in the Mets.
Yeah, and you see how good he's been for the Mets, and he's basically the heart of their franchise. Like, Francisco Lindor is the face of it right now with the amount of success that he's had over the past year. But I think Pete Alonso is the heart of that franchise, and a lot of the New Yorker fans love Pete Alonso. You just go over it, you look on Twitter, and you see, because they obviously the New York market is a lot of white men, and they relate to the big white man,
Yeah,
the
the
big
big
polar
polar
bear.
bear.
Yeah, and they relate to that. And you know, Pete Alonso has been immensely successful in New York, and I don't think he wants to mess that up. And I do think there are other suitors. There are a lot of teams that need a first baseman, especially one of Pete Alonso's caliber, power hitting, and somebody that if you can put people on base in front of him, he can score them in. He's third in RBIs with 431 since start of 2021. He's capable of driving in runners, and he can hit that cle he can hit cleanup, and he can hit third. He's somebody that every team probably wants this year or for the foreseeable future. Only 30 years old, you could sign him to, like you said, like a 4-year deal, and you could still get the most out of him because third or first baseman don't really age that poorly, especially ones of Pete Alonso's caliber that are so power heavy and you know, driving a lot of runs. You're not really worried about defense as much. But Pete Alonso is somebody I think we talked about before. I said there's a chance that he could go to the Nationals just because of the glaring spot they have at first base. And you kind of alluded to it with your slip up and said the Mariners would use somebody like him.
You have to
But
call me out.
but yeah, I think Pete Alonso stays in New York. And the reason why is because I think even if the Mets were to get Juan Soto, I think Pete Alonso would take a bit of a discount even. I think being another a Boris client also is something that could help where they see it as an opportunity that they can win and have success together. And a 4 years that you $25 million per year deal, 4 years, 100 million would still be a really good contract for a first baseman.
Yeah, I think my only like the only pushback on that would be like Pete Alonso's never really gotten that big ticket contract just because of like avoiding arbitration and all that. And like personally, if I'm Pete Alonso, I would be kind of selfish to the extent of like I'm not taking less money just so some guy that's never put on a Mets uniform before can get his 680 million. And instead of me getting 130 million, I'm taking 100 million. Like, I don't think he would do that just because he's meant too much to the city of New York. And I think it would kind of be a slap in the face for Pete Alonso. But I could see maybe that happens. I just like, I don't see it being like this egregious pay cut just because, I mean, look, obviously he's made 44 million in career earnings. But when you take in New York taxes and paying your agent, you know, that 44 million becomes roughly 20 million, which is still good money. But if I'm Pete Alonso, like this is my last chance at a big ticket. I gotta at some like I gotta play selfish a little bit, and I wouldn't take that much of a pay cut, even if it means bringing in probably a top five hitter of all time.
But yeah, that'll just about do it for this episode of Breaking News Bears. I once again want to thank my co-host, Evan Davis, and I once again want to thank you guys, the listeners, for listening to another episode of Breaking News Bears. And hopefully by the time next episode comes out, there'll be a lot more free agency deals rather than just Travis d'Arnaud. Thank you again once for listening to another episode of Breaking News Bears.